Night Warrior, he had cut a swath through the surprised muties by using his Colt Magnum carry blaster sparingly, and mostly chilling his opponents with the knife he always carried with him. The old Emerson CQC-7 was a highly prized tactical folding knife, and the razor-sharp blade was maintained by the SEC man in the same chisel-sharpened state as when he first acquired it from the armory. Somehow, and the facts were vague enough to be worrying to Ross Barron if he ever heard them, the knife had found its way from a passing trader to the armory via the SEC chief himself, with no questions asked or answers wanted. Harvey had wanted the knife, and he had taken steps to acquire it. As with everything, his attention was focused, as it was now focused on attaining the nuke. That focus could be one-dimensional, and as the SEC chief cut through the swarm of muties, he didn't notice that one of the Sun Children he had cut wasn't quite chilled. Ryan was in the vicinity, having fought his way through toward the nuke. Looking across, he saw the injured Sun Child drag herself up from the earth, her robe splattered with blood. A slash from the Emerson had cut her throat, and she had collapsed from the shock. But only veins had been cut, not an artery, and although she would eventually bleed to death, she was mustering all the strength she could for one last assault on the SEC chief. Ryan was in hand-to-hand combat as he saw this, and guessing what was to happen, doubled his efforts to dispose of the mutie he was battling. Shifting his balance, he knocked out the grip the mutie had on him by thrusting his arms up and out. While the Sunchild was off balance, Ryan's own powerful forearms crossed, catching the mutie's head in the middle of the cross. A flexion of the powerful muscles and a twist of his body weight ensured that the mutie's soft-boned neck broke. He was dead before he hit the dirt, and Ryan had already turned his attention to Harvey's predicament. Ryan covered the few yards in a matter of seconds, but he was still not quick enough. His Sig Sauer was holstered, and by the time it was unsheathed, a clean shot would have been impossible, with the Sunchild and the SEC chief to entwine. Harvey, for his part, was taken completely by surprise. The Sunchild threw herself about his neck, attempting to drag him backward. His attention focused entirely on what was in front of him. It was only the wiry man's strength that stopped him tumbling back under the sudden force from behind. Harvey could feel the warm blood trickling from her, the fetid breath in his ear and on his neck, the panting and grunting of her breath as she tried to pull him down with all the strength she had left in her body. The SEC chief fought against it, pulling himself forward and attempting to throw her over his shoulder. But her weight was centered too far down her body. Her arms were locked around his throat, and he couldn't breathe properly, gasping for breath. He hacked at her flesh with the Emerson, but in her dying condition she seemed impervious to pain, and not even the razor-sharp blade cutting through the flesh of her fingers could force her to relent. Ryan could see the difficulty the SEC chief was having, and unwound the scarf from his own throat. The long scarf was weighted at each end by carefully concealed and secured weights, which made the scarf a useful and unobtrusive weapon. It was especially useful now. With a flick of his powerful wrist, judging the distance exactly with his practiced eye, Ryan kept hold of one end of the scarf and sent the other shooting toward the mutie. The tip of the scarf, weighted as it was, gained momentum in flight and cracked against the temple of the woman's head. A large bruise, weeping a thin trickle of blood, grew up almost as soon as the weight hit home, and she grunted heavily, her consciousness dimmed by the blow. Harvey heard the crack, felt her dying breath as she grunted, then felt her grip ease as she slipped away from him and down to the earth, still bleeding from her throat wound. Harvey rubbed his sore throat.
Thanks, Cyclops.
Ryan retrieved the scarf and wrapped it around his neck once more, fixing the SEC chief with a glare before plunging on into the fray.
Don't thank me. Just remember you owe me.
Maybe, just maybe, that favor would count for something. The battle was finally over. It had been short and bloody, and the vast majority of the casualties belonged to the Somptvogel dwellers. Doc and Christy watched the raw war party moving among the dead Sun Children to gather blasters or to chill any muties who might still be alive and therefore a threat.
When I was still a fairly young man, when I was still in that time before the white coat horrors, they would take the Native American and treat him like this.
Uncle Tyus McCann used to tell us of those days. He used to say that the law of dog eat dog was all that ruled. And the inherent stupidness of it was that he'd never seen a dog eat a dog unless they were put into a ring to fight for men.
An interesting point, my dear. And appropriate, I think. Yes, in some ways. Fear can do strange things. Is this the way a man like Alien seems to rule the rest of the time?
Doc swept the area with the end of his walking stick.
Was it necessary to lay waste to their lives? Certainly they had coexisted long enough.
Sure, but that was before the nuke.
Before the white coat horrors. They will always return to haunt us, I believe.
And your point is? Sometimes we have to do things we don't want or don't like just to survive. You know that as well as anyone.
But at what cost to ourselves?
Doc looked her in the eye. His gaze was clearer and steadier than she had seen it for several days. Doc indicated Alien.
Consider that, man. A life spent living a certain way, questioned and perhaps destroyed in a night. Consider the people. This was easier?
Christie looked at Roz Baron. He stood in the center of the Ville while his people scavenged, and a party of Sek and some of the stronger Ville dwellers, the blacksmith and the armorers among them, rigged the nuke with ropes and makeshift platforms to effect a way of carrying it back to Ra. Alien was bowed, more like the vanquished than the victor. This was in contrast to Harvey, who was directing operations as though he himself had assumed the baronial role. Christie's musings were stopped as Mildred came up to them. The physician kept an eye on the party securing the nuke as she spoke to them.
No sign of Dean. I've looked all over, and so has John. Haven't seen Ryan or Jack yet, but I'll bet you a whole heap of self-heats that I know what their answers will be if you ask them.
He never left Ra. That's something I guess we'll have to deal with when we get back. And quick, because I think the power base may be shifting in the Ville before long.
She gestured in Alien's direction with a slight inclination of the head. Mildred took in the situation at a glance. The conversation was repeated almost word for word when Ryan and then Jack returned from scouting the remains of Samtvogel. But Jack had something more to add.
Only Sunchild alive.
He looked over to where the muty Baron was trussed, like a wild animal, tied to a stake driven into the ground while the nuke was secured.
Because aliens say.
What about any survivors?
Didn't you see them chilling any who hadn't already bought the farm?
I meant those who may have got out of the valley during the fighting.
None.
Jack indicated the road out.
Sec chill anyone reach there.
Harvey certainly made sure of this one.
The one-eyed warrior led the way over to where the Sec chief was preparing the nuke for the return journey. He seemed to be assuming sole charge of the nuke, while the Baron, who should have been directing or overseeing operations, was standing to one side, seemingly lost in thought.
Anything we can do to help?
Harvey cast a wary eye over the companions.
Not here. Maybe you could help fire the place.
Fire?
Damn. But I thought you blacks were smart.
Harvey ignored both Mildred's angry look and the fleetingly hostile glances from Ant and Dee, who were busy with the nuke, but not so busy that they couldn't overhear. It didn't escape Jack's notice that Blake also cast a glance in the Sec Chief's direction. Perhaps there would be allies there when the crunch came down.
Look, this place ain't got no one left alive. It's just some charnel house shit pit for the buzzards. Who knows what disease could spring up here unless we clean it up. Cleanse the area, you know?
Alien's orders?
Yeah, sure.
He called over to the Baron.
Fire the place, Alien.
The Baron replied with a non-committal wave of his hand. Harvey grinned.
Sure as shit good enough for me, Cyclops. So you want to do this?
The Sec Chief's insolent and superior gaze met the rock-steady, steely blue eye. Ryan's gaze was stronger, harder. The Sec Chief looked away and changed the subject.
You find Cyclops Jr.?
No, but I think you knew that. I know he'll turn up, but not here.
Ryan turned to his friends.
We might as well get this over and done with.
None of them were happy with the circumstances surrounding the firing of Samtvogel, but the catch was that the Sec Chief had a valid point. Samtvogel could become a hotbed of disease with so many rotting, chilled corpses within the valley, and this disease could then be borne to the forest by the bird life. So it was essential that the valley be cleansed with fire. Ryan and his companions joined the members of the Ra War Party who were engaged in preparing the firing. There were already numerous small fires blazing around the valley floor, and these would be the source of the bigger blaze. The lamps were being extinguished and their oil collected. Some of the war party had discovered the storehouse where the supplies of fuel were kept, in an old outhouse to one side of one of the ranch houses, and this was added to that collected from the lamps. Now came the part that seemed the vilest. The chilled muty sun children had to be doused with the oil to enable them to burn. The areas in between were also drenched with trails of oil, stopping short of the fires. For the whole thing to go up before the war party had left the valley would be disastrous, and it was a fine line between leaving a gap that would prevent immediate firing and a gap that would be too large for the fire to...